Yes, folks, it's 2 p.m. It's Thursday. I'm Fred McMurray, which means this must be... God, I love that intro. I'm Fred McMurray. This is Pillars of Franchising. That's our head bashing band, Markell's Audio Lab. I'm with Ray Pillar and Elizabeth Denham, and we're rocking on Pillars of Franchising. Hi, Ray. Hi, Elizabeth. Huh? How are we doing today?
Good. Really good. Sitting here in Aurora, Illinois. Not next to Crazy Horse, of course, but... this whole thing is crazy with the coronavirus and all, so why not Crazy Horse? And temperature here is 70. Sunny, partly cloudy.
I heard you're going to get snow this weekend.
Yeah, it's Chicago. Wait 5 minutes if you don't like the weather.
Yeah, I know, but...
Give you all four seasons in a matter of minutes.
I get it. And I've always warned people when they'd say, oh, it's April. I'd say, nope, you're not safe until May 10th. If it hasn't snowed by May 10th in Chicago, you're okay. May 9th, you'll get the snow. It'll be gone. Everyone else will have broken bones. Elizabeth, how you doing? Where are you? What's the weather like?
Doing good. I'm in Spanish Fort, Alabama. We are having what we call a cold snap for this time of year. It was supposed to be 49 tonight. It's 74 right now. It's going to be 80. We're going from 49 to 80 tomorrow. So we're having a 30 degree swing.
Wow.
But it's gorgeous. No clouds, no rain. It's absolutely beautiful.
And no snow.
And no hope of snow. Usually once every 10 years for us.
Yeah. So how's the weather out there, Fred?
It looks, while the background I've got is obviously, I think, Hawaii. It looks quite a bit about the same. I've been having to put shorts on once I got to the office. It's been in the 80s. I mean, it's rough. No shoes.
That's boring. That's boring. You don't have weather.
Yeah, I know. I'm fine with that most of the time. I want weather. I come back to Chicago. I'm there for Christmas time. I get a month's worth of or a year's worth of weather just in the time
that's
I'm there.
That's true. You stay here a couple of days and you see all the seasons.
You know what we're having just down the road in Florida is wildfires, which we never have.
Oh, I saw that.
Yeah, there were two or three yesterday. They were evacuating and the houses burned and it was bad. It was crazy. We have a little bit of wind and no humidity, which is also unusual for us, and so things are burning.
There's blizzards, heat waves, pandemics, firestorms, and it just makes me think about this very famous line.
Teepee, you must give me your teepee!
Gosh, Beavis, you scared me.
Trick or treat, son of a bitch!
Come on, Beavis, I know it's you. You're dope.
Give me your tippy!
Now, you see, I play that clip because that seems to be happening in all the stores lately.
It's crazy.
There's a video that was taken by somebody of a security guard wrestling with two women in front of, I think it was a Walmart, but it could have been anything. And the security guard gets the one woman who's just wailing on this other woman off and pushes her to the side. And then all of a sudden you see this other guy come flying, and I mean literally flying through the air, kicks the woman that was pushed off in the chest. She goes flying. The security guard gets up. The guy who kicked the other woman grabs up the other woman on the ground and runs off with her, saving his girlfriend. But wow, people are getting vicious at the store.
And let me ask, were they fighting over a roll of toilet paper?
I'm assuming that's a better story that they were. So that's kind of my assumption. So note to our listeners and our watchers, hopefully everything's far more stable. While we are live today, you can call in at 323-580-5755. That's 323-580-5755. Or you can chat at either thepillarsoffranchising.com or thelincolocalnetwork.com. Our guest today was unable to be here live, so we're going to be going in a very short time to the first segment of our interview with Laura Spalding of Spalding Decon. But first, any news, Ray? Any news?
News?
Any news? Just a random shot.
Nothing exciting happening. We are still doing business as usual at a substantial loss, but still out there responding to some of our clients who are first responders who don't have time to clean their home. So just hanging in there, you know, nothing exciting right now happening.
Elizabeth, what about you? What new news, events, exciting news you got?
I got a little bit of news. Our May issue came out on Friday, so if you have not taken a look at that, you can look at it at thefranchisewoman.com. Next week on Wednesday, we will be launching our first episode of the Franchise Woman podcast that we are calling When Passion and Purpose Collide. Mm-hmm. So we are excited about that. Angela Cote is going to be our guest. So you'll want to tune in on Wednesday at 4 o'clock Central Time.
Fantastic.
Exciting.
That's exciting.
Rebecca Monet is co-hosting, so you don't want to miss her either. I don't want to forget to mention my amazing co-host.
Yeah.
Cracking me up. I know where I'll be sitting for it. Yes, I know where I'll be. That's okay. So, anything else anybody want to talk about before we jump into our interview with Laura Spalding?
No, but I'm excited for everybody to see her because she her business is actually booming with the pandemic, which is something nice to hear.
Yeah.
From it, I think a whole different arm of her business is going to grow and sustain us. So you talk about people who are able to pivot to another service that may not have been something they were focused on. So she's a great interview, so you'll enjoy it.
Right, well, then, at this point, let's go to Laura.
Hello, and welcome to our interview with Laura Spalding. She is the
just kind of became, you know, just kind of, I was never going anywhere. I was always working, you know, extra jobs, and I was tired of being poor, essentially. So I started to look into starting a business, and I didn't really know what I wanted to do at that time. And I was kind of researching different things. And then just one night, a woman asked me when we were coming back to clean up the crime scene. And I thought, well, that's an interesting question. And I have no idea who does that. And she thought that the police did it. So we had this short conversation about how we didn't. And then I really got to thinking about it, and I looked into it, and I realized this was back in 2005, that it's definitely a niche and one that's not, at that time, currently being filled in many parts of the country. So I started looking for some training on, you know, best practices and OSHA and how to do everything. And I found a training school at the time in Dallas, Texas. So I used the only week of vacation that I had and the very little savings that I had at the time. And I flew out there for a week and I got trained and certified on how to do it. And I was hooked at that time.
Hooked because, sorry, Fred, I just have to know what hooked you about it.
Yeah, so what it was is I was always exposed, you know, being in law enforcement to those type of scenes anyway. So there was really no shock and awe factor for me. It didn't bother me. I almost became jaded to it. It was just so frequent. Kansas City is one of the most violent cities in the country. Mm-hmm. So we were having, you know, multiple shootings every single day. So none of this really fazed me at all from that perspective. And then when we when I got into the economics of it and I saw how lucrative it was, this was just kind of the answer to my questions of, you know, I liked law enforcement. I had a good time doing it, but it's definitely, there was no longevity there for me because of the low pay.
So you started Spalding Decon Industries. Wow. To go in and clean up crime scenes and meth labs and other nasty, disgusting places. Most people run away from messes like that. Why do you think you were drawn toward it?
Well, you know, when I first started researching businesses and what I wanted to do, there was a couple of criteria, recession-proof being one of them. And number two was a high barrier of entry. And I attributed the high barrier of entry to be people not wanting to do something like a gross job or a dirty job. So when you have something like that, you can charge a higher premium for it. So it was just a perfect fit for the criteria that I had written down for myself of what I wanted.
So it seems to me a strong stomach is one of the number one criteria for a potential franchisee.
Yes, I would say a strong stomach, empathy, and the ability to kind of detach.
Okay. And meth labs do tend to be recession-proof, don't they?
We actually do quite a bit better in a poor economy when it comes to drug labs. Because the lack of jobs causes people to get creative and they start, you know, cooking meth and recreating the Breaking Bad.
Yeah, I got to think about this one now. Go ahead, Elizabeth.
Well, when you talked about the empathy and the ability to detach, those are sort of conflicting emotions or abilities. And I would imagine not everybody has both of those. I've had a job where I had to do those things to separate from the trauma of people. But I would imagine there's a degree of almost counseling that you do when you're talking to families of victims or families of people who've been arrested or that kind of thing. So how do you weed through the people, your employees or your franchisees, how do you get them to find those special people? Because I would think that would be a little bit challenging and they have to have the skills to accomplish the job.
Yeah, so you're right. It's not easy. We want the empathy to deal with the living, and we want the detachment to deal with the cleanup itself. And, you know, empathy is something that we have found as a franchise system that we can't teach. You either have it or you don't. So, you know, we don't have a lot of time and face time and together time with franchise candidates. So we try to ask, you know, a series of questions around it, you know, what their life experiences have been like, if they've had death in their family, if they've had any tragedies, how they've dealt with it, because we also want to teach that leave your judgment at home, because, you know, we do a lot of hoarding as well, and that requires a level of, you know, a game face. We don't allow any judgment. You know, what you say at home is one thing, but when you're in front of the client, you're completely poker faced.
Since Ray's not around, I want to get into some of the Ray questions. What, and we talked about some of the skill sets, empathy, strong stomach, that a potential franchisee would need. what type of cash does a franchisee need to get started? What, cash, resources, things like that. What do they need to get a franchise going?
You know, we're considered a low-cost investment. We're under $150,000. The peak, I think, is $139,000 and some change. And that's all in. So your biggest expenses are your vehicle. It's you know, specially set up vehicle for the equipment and chemicals that we have. And then the equipment package. We have a variety of things, everything from ozone machines to air movers, dehumidifiers, saws. We remove a lot of subflooring. So we go over all that in training. But, you know, again, at the end of the day, it is a home-based business if you choose at the beginning to do it that way, which I find helps franchisees strategize their budgeting at the onset, maybe for the first year of their business, and helps them allocate those extra funds into marketing.
I wish I had my applause screen. I could have hit the applause. You hit my favorite word, marketing. So let's talk about marketing. How do you market what almost sounds like, you know, it's hard to market for disaster, and yet you're kind of disaster cleanup. So how do your franchisees market? How do you market?
You know, marketing for disasters, most people think, you know, hurricanes, earthquakes, floods, those type of things. Those are typically easier to market for because they tend to be seasonal, especially for us in Florida. But marketing for death is unappealing, and it's very tricky. And we had to really, you know, when I first started, I was throwing a ton of darts at the board and seeing what stuck. There was a lot of different things that I put out there, spent and wasted a ton of money on avenues that didn't work, and then focused on things that did. And that's kind of what I bring to the table from a franchisor perspective, because they don't have to waste that money. I can tell them exactly what works and what doesn't work, and they can just go straight to those avenues. So when it came to the biohazard portion, which is the sensitive portion, we take a little bit of a different strategy than any of our competitors. We have a really huge social media following, and we take an educational aspect of it. This is what happens, you know, when a person passes away or when a person has an esophageal rupture or any of those natures. And they find it interesting that not only is there somebody to clean that up and that homeowners insurance covers it, but that we're really showing them from beginning to end of how it works.
Elizabeth?
I think I wouldn't have begun to know how to market that. So I think it's incredibly interesting. And I mentioned before we got on the air that I had watched one of your videos, and it looks like you're using video quite a bit. And it was an educational thing. Here's how we do it. Here's what happens. Here's what the next step is. Here's how we cover ourselves to protect our own safety. And that kind of thing. So I think that that is really interesting to people. I didn't know homeowners insurance would cover that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So in terms of how much are you doing in video?
We're doing quite a bit. So our media team has grown. You know, I started out doing this as a trial and error. So, you know, I sat my staff down and I said, listen, a considerable amount of people want to know what we do, how we do it. And I got a ton of kickback from my staff. They were saying, you know, aren't you worried about competitors seeing how we do it? And I said, no, you know, I'm not worried at all. I find that providing the educational aspect of it is going to overcome that. And then they were worried about the clientele. And I overcame that by getting written permission for everything that we do. So it was a big of faith on my part, because if it didn't work, it could have come off as extremely callous and maybe insensitive. But I said, you know what, I'm going to give this about 90 days and see what happens. And I was shocked at the not only the ROI, but the reception that we got on everything. Like, we have a cult-like following now, and I never anticipated that it would be as huge as it was, to the point where it's getting national media sources that are contacting us about the massive growth on, you know, Instagram and YouTube.
That's fascinating. And I think I read that you've been, have you consulted on articles or shows or other things that are looking for information about decontamination and cleanup?
Yeah, so we were invited to, you know, there's we're always getting contacted by reality shows that want to, you know, want to feature us or do a show around us. And, you know, typically it's a pitch that, you know, most of the time goes nowhere. So what I decided to do is after, you know, 10 years of being asked to do this over and over and, you know, being locked in all these contracts that went nowhere, I decided to do my own reality show. So I hired a videographer and editors, and we put on our own reality series on YouTube, and it's been a massive hit.
And what's the YouTube channel?
Crime Scene Cleaning, all one word.
So it's youtube.com/crimescenecleaning for those of you watching who want to, but wait until after the show's over to go check it out.
Yeah.
Please. So how many franchisees do you have now, and where are you looking to grow?
Well, we have 11 owners right now with 24 locations. We have about 9 more that are coming on board here in the next 90 days. We're looking to grow on the West Coast and in the Midwest. I find that there's a really big void for what we do in the Midwest area. And ironically, there's a high concentration of drug labs in those areas.
Go figure.
Yeah.
And with that, folks, we'll go and take a commercial break, and then we'll be back, and Elizabeth will ask her next question.
Folks, almost lost it there, folks. What can I say? It's sometimes difficult. So, what'd you think, right? What'd you think, Elizabeth, of the first half of Laura?
I'm gonna YouTube right after the show and take a look at some of those.
The video that I watched was so interesting because a semi hit someone who was killing himself on a highway, and they were going through the cleanup of that in the aftermath. The truck had sat there for a couple of months in the heat, and I told her it's like a train wreck because you can't stop watching it, but you don't want to watch it. So you need to watch it. It's a whole interesting process that they do.
I haven't been to the YouTube channel yet, but it's a really interesting thing.
Yeah, so, they find the dude's glasses in the engine as they're taking everything apart and cleaning it. It's horrifying.
And on that note, we'll go ahead and thank FeedSpot for listing us in their top 20 list of franchise podcasts you must follow in 2020. We're number one, folks. Now a word from our first sponsor.
Hey, franchise owners. How's your local marketing? Do you feel like you could use some help keeping up with your social media posts and comments and reviews? Do you wonder if you could be doing more to attract local customers? Are you able to identify new movements to your local area? At Westvine, we help franchisees like you reach more local customers through digital marketing. With daily monitoring, creative content, ad placement, and customer data intelligence, we'll get your business in front of the people who want your products or services. We also work with franchisors who need an agency to handle the digital marketing for all of their locations. If you're ready to reach more local customers, give us a call at 805-265-5440 or visit us at westvine.com. That's 805-265-5440 or westvine with a y.com.
Thanks, Michelle.
The Franchise Woman is a bi-monthly digital magazine that empowers women as they navigate the franchising industry by providing relevant news, tools, advice, and inspiration. We are a resource for women who are seeking to own their own businesses, improve their existing businesses, find creative solutions, and take advantage of franchise opportunities. We feature women in the business who best exemplify our ideals and have something to teach our readers. In addition to our exclusive articles relating to the female entrepreneur, we also feature brands that are geared for women. Women have become the fastest growing sector in business ownership and have become a powerful, influenceable force fueling the economy. The Franchise Woman will give you the news that is relevant to you to help you navigate the path of successful franchise ownership. By women, for women, and about women, we are the Franchise Woman. Join us today at www.thefranchisewoman.com.
No! It's not yet that time for Down the Rabbit Hole question, but do you love the new graphics? I love them. So we're back to Elizabeth. Shall we get started on the second chunk?
We shall.
Ooh, still some. Gotten some tech difficulties here, folks, but I know I can talk long enough in order to fix the issue.
Can you seek out the high crime areas for your next location? Would that be accurate?
Well, actually, what we do is we look for metropolitan areas. So we want large cities. We really try to avoid what I call bedroom communities and less encompassing a large metro area. So we find that that's where we get most of our clientele, because we really are, we're probably about 60% B2B and 40% B2C. So it gives us a really good combination.
So on that, who calls you? Who call? I'm assuming you get called by authorities more than you do homeowners, or am I wrong there?
Yeah, no, it's actually law enforcement doesn't get involved in any type of cleanup on private property. So most of our work comes from property managers, hotels, body shops, car rental companies, funeral homes, homeowners, of course, and insurance companies are a big one.
Car rental? Oh, man, it makes me paranoid to rent.
Yeah, you'd be surprised how many people rent cars just to commit crime.
Wow. So interesting. So wait, so when you're, if I'm a potential franchisee, what kind of training, do I have to have experience with this? Do you have a training program?
Yeah, so no experience required, because if that was a requirement, we wouldn't have anybody.
I would figure that.
It's so niche. We do quite a bit of training here in Tampa, 5 days here, and then we have a franchise coach that's assigned to the new franchisees. That really helps them do everything from marketing. We have some tricks of the trade for that, and setting up their digital advertising, to creating a budget, and to really just kind of set up their day, hire their staff. You know, we help them in all aspects, because most of our franchisees have never been business owners before. So everything is new to them, as opposed to just this particular business.
So do you find you get more men who want to become franchisees, or do you get more women?
I would say it's probably, in terms of inquiries, it's probably about 65-70% male and the rest female. You know, I am happy that we have three female owners now out of 11, not as many as I would like. So I obviously want to give, you know, plenty of opportunities to women and minorities, because I find that they just excel well in our business.
But you're running around the national average, which is, I think, 30.6% female franchisee ownership. And out of 11 is, from what I can tell, real close to that.
I was unaware of that. So, yeah, I guess we're right on.
No weird thing.
Yeah. Good guess.
Go ahead, Elizabeth.
Oh, sorry. I thought you were still questioning. So in terms of emotional impact on your workers, do you have things to help them deal with that or recover or mitigate those? I mean, I'm sure it takes some getting used to. It's not going to be that you walk in the door and you can have empathy and detach. So do you have a way that you guide them through that process?
You know, we do a pretty intensive, not only pre-hiring process, but also a training process. The first 90 days is a big evaluation. Unfortunately, I would say only about 1 in 10 make it. And you would think that it was from the emotional impact. It's actually not. Most of them all, probably 99% fail because of their lack of physical fitness or their inability to keep up physically. We have to wear respirators, and that's essentially like, you know, breathing out of a straw. Air movement because they're splash resistant. So the conditions that we work in are extreme. And if you're not in shape and you're not hydrating and eating properly, you're not going to make it. So I would say the majority don't even make it the first month.
Wow. That's a huge thing for a business owner.
Yeah.
To be able to toe the line until they find the ones that are going to stick with them.
Yeah.
So that means that, all right. So your franchisees, how many employees do they on average have?
Three is ideal for them. We've got, you know, some offices that are far busier than others that have, you know, over 10 to 15 employees.
And all these, the employees also have to be physically fit so they can wear the suit. So it's not just the franchisee himself.
It's oh, no.
Employees. Yeah. So where's the biggest source of employees your franchisees find?
You know, it's crazy. Most people think that we would have a hard time finding employees, and it's actually the easiest part of our business. We get most of our employees probably from social media. They like the show. They watch it. They follow us. They want to get into the business. And they look for a location that's nearest them, and they're just beating down the door until they can get hired.
That would make sense. They'd all have strong stomachs, then.
Yeah. And they see the physical fitness that's required, you know, because they're watching our jobs. We don't censor anything. So, and I think that's one of the things that they like about the show is, you know, TV is a lot of fake stuff. Even the reality shows are a lot of fake stuff. Mm-hmm. I keep it as real as possible. We don't change any language. We don't, you know, we don't hide or censor anything. So, you know, and the feedback that we're getting is most people are appreciative of that because they want to see the real. They want to see the raw.
Yeah, it is real and it is raw. And you hear the conversations and sometimes there's cursing and frustration and
yep.
Physical challenge. I do think that it gives you a very full picture of what you're getting into if that's the direction that you're heading. Let's shift a little bit to the current pandemic situation, because I know that you've done a lot of decontamination. I was reading that you did some fogging in daycares and trying to get everything ready for when things do open back up. So tell us how that's impacted your business.
You know, it's been crazy. So I was fortunate enough to be well prepared, and the system was well prepared to handle the influx of calls that we've gotten. We didn't have to change anything from a business perspective. We were fortunate enough that the disinfectant that we were already using, that we've been using for over a decade, was one of the first ones to be approved by the CDC for a good kill for coronavirus. So we had that. We had the Tyvek suits. We had the respirators already. We had plenty of chemicals. So it was really just a perfect fit for us. It was like a puzzle piece. So when this came, we were ready, and our franchisees have just, the only thing that they were trying to keep up with was staffing. And fortunately or not fortunate, however you want to look at it, there was plenty of people being laid off. So our labor pool just totally opened up, and we were able to get people extremely easily that were able to jump in and help us keep up with the workload.
As I've always said, one person's disasters and another person's
no doubt, no doubt.
Now, in terms of long-term, I mean, hopefully they talk about there may be a second wave or, you know, we don't know exactly where it's going. But beyond that, beyond the immediate coronavirus, do you see this as something that people will do more often now just because they know of the possibilities?
I do. So I think it's going to change the landscape of how businesses handle their disinfection and cleaning. You know, historically, they've always had, you know, kind of maid services and everything. But I think what they're doing is they're concentrating. We've done a ton of manufacturing facilities, which historically is not the type of business where you would send in, you know, your maid crew to clean up. And we've had a lot of outbreaks in those type of facilities because they're all touching the same tools and the same equipment. So what we're anticipating, and of course, this is just a projection, is that there's going to be some set of standards implemented for disinfection moving forward, whether it be a third-party requirement or an in-house requirement. But I think this is going to be kind of the lay of the land moving forward because of the panic that this has caused. And not only that, but from, you know, an economic perspective, it's been a disaster for most companies. They can't afford another one of these outbreaks.
Yeah, most can't. I want to go to the hoarding part of it because, you know, we've been talking about the disease and crime and drug side of it, but the hoarding side's a bit of a different animal. And I know a bit about hoarding from family members. So how often do you get those calls? What are they like?
Well, we get quite a bit, and they come from different sources. Most people think that it's mostly like an intervention type situation. And in some cases it is, but we have found that a lot of them is we're getting called from the hoarder themselves, whether they're just, you know, they're ready to make that change and they're ready to overcome whatever issue was causing this in the first place, or family has discovered the way they've been living and they jump in and they want to help. Then they quickly realize that it is too much for them to handle, not only emotionally, but physically. It's a difficult job. So they'll call us in and maybe we'll work in conjunction, or maybe they'll just hand off the baton and we'll take it from there. But each hoarder's needs are very, very different. Some of them just want to walk away from the home. So we offer the real estate buying portion where they just sell us the home and they walk away with a check. And we deal with the aftermath of it. And it's our responsibility to rehabilitate the home and fix it and resell it. Or they can pay us to throw the stuff away, sort it, donate it. I mean, we have so many options for them that I think that's why they feel comfortable with us, because we're not a junk removal company. We're not just going to come in and throw everything away. We actually spend many days and sometimes weeks with these people to understand what they want their home to look like when we're done, and we try to create that vision for them.
Man, sounds like you get a whole lot of good stuff there.
Yeah, I love it.
Have you ever thought about, like, when you're doing a hoarding home, to put a call out to other hoarders to see if they want to come and for their stuff? Never mind. I'm like, that would be a great way to virally market, calling all hoarders.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Well, I was very interested when I was reading up on you about the reselling part. How often does that happen? How much of that is that a whole separate business in terms of rehabbing and reselling, or is that under the umbrella of Spalding Decon? And how much more of that do you want to do?
Yeah, that's a great question. So unfortunately, I didn't merge it into the business until 2016. So I have always been very, very interested in real estate investments, and I've always done it kind of as a separate company on the side. And it was one of those situations, again, like an epiphany. I was at a hoarder's property, and it was in horrible, horrible shape. And it was a condo, and the HOA wanted this person out, regardless of the fact whether she got help or got it cleaned up. They wanted her out. So I was able to just say, hey, I'll buy it. You know, take what you want out of it. I'll buy it. I literally got the condo for $5,000. And, you know, I was left with it. I gutted it. I rehabbed it. And then I sold it a couple months later for a profit. And I thought, you know what? This is easily repeatable. I'm going to, you know, kind of fix and fine tune my process, create a system for this. So I did it several more times in my location before I actually put it out to the franchisees. And I created a training program for it. And to be honest, it's been a game changer for us. because it gives our franchisees a ton of capital to work with, and they have almost no output of expenses at all, other than maybe a cleanup, because we teach them how to wholesale, which is essentially just getting the property under contract and selling that contract to another investor.
So have they all incorporated that into their franchise?
Almost all of them. The ones that are doing it, you can tell it's like Christmas to them. They want to do it again. They're so excited and they want to take it to the next level. So we kind of have, you know, little talks and meetings about, hey, this is, you know, if you want to get more of this type of deal, this is how you do it outside of our business. But, you know, in our corporate office, we probably do about 10 offers a week, and we close about on one. So about one out of 10, because not everybody has the same end game as in mind, but one out of 10 is good for us. And, you know, I made a show out of a couple of them where we do the rehab on them, and people seem to like the transformation. We did a really big one called Pet Cemetery. There was, you know, two dead people and 80 some cats in that house. And I was able to rehab that house, and it's absolutely gorgeous now. And I just got a tenant in it. So it's amazing. And you would never know what it looked like before. So that was really fun, kind of showing the before that was an absolute nightmare that nobody would ever want to go in. And now after, where I literally have YouTube people saying, I'll move there just to live in that house. So that's really super rewarding for me. And then on the flip side, to have the franchisees make, you know, we had a franchisee make over 40 some thousand dollars in less than 24 hours just on doing one of these deals. So that's extremely rewarding to me, and I'm just super proud of them.
80 cats?
Yeah.
Man, I'm flashing to the crazy cat lady in The Simpsons.
Yeah. Check out that episode, Pet Cemetery.
Well, I would imagine you think of doing the rehab and that process for the hoarding people, but I would imagine if you have someone who's had suicides or homicides or bad things happen in their homes, a lot of people don't want to live there anymore.
Exactly.
So I would imagine this could translate across almost all the verticals that you do.
It does. It really does. So whether they can't afford the cleanup or whether they just don't want the emotional impact of keeping the house, we're kind of satisfying everything. So it's really been amazing for us. And, you know, I'm just sad that I didn't implement it sooner. You know, it just kind of hit me in 2016 that, hey, I can merge these two passions together. And it's been a ton of fun.
Okay. So you had said before that you'd like to grow, your major target are major metro. Chicago would be one. I'm assuming someplace like Milwaukee, that's still large enough.
Yep.
How small is the major metro you want to go to? Is Des Moines too small, or Des Moines large enough?
No, that's large enough. That's fine. Our territories are 500,000 people. So, you know, it would probably start at the city center of Des Moines and then kind of go a radius out until you got it. But again, the Midwest is extremely underserved. So, you know, putting one franchisee in the state of Iowa, they would probably do quite well.
Okay. So, Coast, you also want to grow there. There's a whole lot of trash and meth labs and stuff like that on the Coast. Any concern about either or governmental bureaucracy, red tape, from slowing you down going to California?
We're already in San Francisco in Walnut Creek, California. Actually, the West Coast is more appealing to us than anywhere else because they have more contract opportunities than anywhere else in the country, specifically California. Just about every state every county and every city has a potential contract for biohazard cleanup and several other things. So we want to be able to target those, and we need more franchisees in those areas to be able to keep up with that demand.
Okay. Interesting. Elizabeth?
So you started this off by yourself for the first year, and then you were able to hire an employee, but it seems like incredibly quickly you were up and running and selling franchises and, you know, moving on up. So what do you think your growth potential is over the next 1 year and then maybe 5 years in terms of how many locations you'd like to have? And I know we talked about where you'd like to have them.
Yeah, so it might look quick, but it certainly hasn't felt that way. So,
right.
No, I started in 2005, and I didn't start legally able to franchise until 2015. We had our first franchisee in 2016. So I've made a ton of mistakes on vetting franchisees and picking the right ones for the particular brand, probably like many new franchisors do. So in my opinion, we should probably be a little further ahead than what we are now. But the goal is then to really get 100 solid franchisees around the country in major metropolitan areas. I have no desire to do, you know, kind of the McDonald's thing where you have one on each corner. That's never been my intention. I want them to be able to scale and grow enough in their area. And I think a 500,000 population is fantastic. Most of our franchisees own multiple territories just so they can monopolize that metropolitan city.
Drive through Decon. Interesting. Mayor McCheese and the Hamburglar. Okay, now I'm really having a whole lot of images in my head. So as you might be able to tell from the background, it's time for the down the rabbit hole question. Now, normally we ask about zombie apocalypse or alien invasion, but those seem too easy for So we're going to flip it to artificial intelligence. I know. How will artificial intelligence affect Spalding Decon in cleaning and removing hoarders and meth labs and things like that, cleaning up that stuff?
You know, I've actually thought about that quite a bit because I play this little game with my business colleagues of what business is going to be eliminated by AI or you know, transition so to the point where we are no longer doing things like we used to do. So, and I've thought about this, like how can AI eliminate my business? And I really don't think it can because we're a service-based business. And it requires the human component of it, whether it be the empathy or the actual physical cleaning of it. I don't think AI would be able to replace us. Now, there's several other businesses that, you know, that I've predicted that will probably be eliminated here within the next 5 to 10 years.
Okay. So we've gone down the rabbit hole.
Yes.
With somebody who's already been down the rabbit hole. What's that?
All right. So if somebody wants to get in touch with you, either a client or a potential franchisee, what is the best way to reach you?
Well, it's probably through our website, SpaldingDecon.com. If you're interested in franchising, it's /franchise. You can book a call. You can see all the criteria that we require to become a franchisee. And if, you know, if you think you have the ambition and the stomach for it and the empathy, we want to hear from you.
Yeah, stomach was where I would have gone with that. Would have put it number one, but that's okay. I want to thank Dolores Spalding of Spalding Decon for being our guest today on Pillars of Franchising. She's got a strong stomach, and I would bet you do not want to challenge her to a disgusting view contest, because it seems she could probably gross out most people. Thanks, Laura.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
We had a great time, and it was quite interesting and disgusting. It's on all sides from what I can say. I can say that.
Thanks. Glad I can deliver.
Thank you, Laura.
Have a great day, guys.
And hopefully we're all back live. She really had a strong stomach from some of the stuff she saw.
Yeah, stronger than I would.
Although, Ray, you know, I was thinking about it, and adding a Spalding Decon franchise to your Molly Main, you could have, like, multiple levels, high-end, and then the meth lab blend.
Do you get the spoils when you go to the meth lab?
Hey, from the sounds of it, they're selling the houses of the hoarders. Why not?
Yeah.
it comes with a bonus.
Yeah.
I'm thinking so. Interesting. The longer we do this show and the more franchisors we talk to, the weirder they seem to get.
Well, that's true.
I, not sure what to tell you. They just seem to get weirder and weirder and weirder.
Or more and more smart, because she's doing something no one else wants to do. And when you're the only one doing it or willing to, you know, that's actually pretty brilliant.
That's a niche.
Yeah.
I've always said I believe in going toward, I always said I believed toward going to the blue ocean where everyone's not fighting it out like they are in the red ocean. So any final thoughts, folks? Elizabeth?
Nothing too much. Just tune in next week for the Franchise Women podcast and then on Thursday for the next Pillars of Franchising.
Yeah. Yeah.
What? Anything to add there, Ray?
Stay healthy. Be safe. Wear your mask. Wash your hands.
And be profitable and watch the show.
Yes.